buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's, estás justo a tiempo. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11-19, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
What's going on? What's going on? It's your boy, Jay Will, your host of the Jay Will Podcast. Listen to this podcast for informational purposes only. It should not be used as a health, tax, or business advice of any kind. We are not responsible, let me say this again, we're not responsible for anything that may happen as a result of viewing this podcast. Listen, won't you support the Jay Will Podcast via the Cast Podcast app, the donations feature on the app, rss.com, or $JayWillPodcast. This podcast is sponsored to you by Charlie's Music Factory. For all your production needs, contact Mr. Chris Crane at charliesmusicfactory@gmail.com. Don't forget to go to your Play Store and download the Live 365 app from your Play Store. It's free. And plug in J. Will Gospel Radio, 24/7 gospel music, 7 days a week. All right, ladies and gentlemen, homies and homettes, y'all won't believe who I got in the virtual studio with me right now. A young man who is doing some really big things, and I'm going to let him tell his story, but we're going to bring it in. Ladies and gentlemen, Fernando Marrero. What's up, buddy?
How you doing, my brother? How's everything? Thank you for having me.
Oh, my God. Man, look, when Miss Pam said, I got Fernando that's going to interview with you on this week, I started sweating. I started pacing the floor. And then finally, ladies and gentlemen, he's smiling. He looks so humble. But you're going to find out in just a minute. But we want to start right here. Tell me where you're from, sir.
Yes, sir. Originally, I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You know, Illadelph, city of brotherly love.
Yeah, man. Hey, I got relatives in Philly.
Oh, yeah? What part?
Don't ask me that. All I know is, my cousins and my uncles live probably 20 minutes from the airport.
Okay. So they're probably in, like, Southwest, maybe South Philly.
Yeah.
Maybe West Philly.
Yeah. And so every time I come to Philly, so I'm a Presbyterian, right?
Okay.
So I don't eat meat. No beef, no pork, no chicken. But every time I come to Philly, I break that diet. I get a Philly cheesesteak.
You got to. What's your go-to spot? I'm about to put you on. What's your go-to spot?
It don't matter. As long as it's from Philly and they dip it in that gravy,
uh-huh.
I'm good, man.
Okay, I feel that, man. But I'm going to go ahead and give you a couple spots, man. You got to go to D'Alessandro's. That's in Roxboro. You also got to hit up Max's. That's in North Philly.
Yeah.
Right there, Broad and Erie. You know, Germantown and Erie, right around there. Another spot, you got Jim Steaks. You got a couple different locations, Jim Steaks. You got one in West Philly off of 63rd Street. And you got another one down there on South Street in South Philly off of 2nd and South. So just classic spots. Ishka Bibble's another one on South Street. But my personal all-time favorite is Max's. You know, Gino's and Pat's was always for a long time, the long-time staple. But it just became too commercial and it ain't the same. And Pat's and Gino's ain't it. No shade, you know what I mean? But my personal opinion, you know, you go to Max's, North Philly, they're going to ask you want a half or a whole. You tell them which you want a whole because they're going to give you a big joint like this. It's a big steak, all the fixings, you know, and this is how we get the cheesesteaks done. You know, this is how you know if you're from Philly, you know, it's like old traditional way of ordering your cheesesteaks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, cheesesteak, salt, pepper, ketchup, mayo on the bun, fried onions, sweet peppers. Bang.
Yeah.
That's it right there. and whatever that sauce is, the gravy.
Uh-huh. The gravy. You probably got something else. They probably put some jus or something or whatever. And sometimes they put like a depending on where you go. Like you go to like Gooey Louie's and different places too. They have an option where you can get cheese whiz. But cheese whiz is not my personal favorite. I like the real cheese. I like it cheesy. I like the onions, the sweet peppers. It's on and popping. You know what I mean? But is North Philly.
Man, the last time I had it, they took the whole sub and dipped it in the gravy.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that sucker was so sloppy, man. My, My face was all wet with dog. All right, so we're going to get off of that because you're going to make me go back and start eating meat, man. I ain't trying to do all that right now. So how long have you lived in Philly? All your life?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm from there. I'm from the Philadelphia area, originally born in Coatesville, Pennsylvania. Coatesville is a small industrial steel mill town about 45 miles southwest of Philly in a neighboring Collinette County called Chester County. Early on in my life, I was an Army brat. You know, my mom was an Army for a little bit, and I traveled a little bit, but mainly raised by my grandparents, my maternal grandparents. And pretty much up until about, I would say, middle school, sixth grade, seventh grade, something like that. And then my mom came back, and then I went to go live with her in Philadelphia. And ever since middle school on up, you know, Philly is what bred me, what raised me, what forged me in the fire. And, you know, everything I am is Philly all day, every day.
Man, that's what's up, bro. That's what's up. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is why we're here, okay? This is why we're here. I want you to hear from me. This young man,
are you ready for this?
Is in Adam Sandler's production, Happy Gilmore 2.
That's right.
I know you didn't hear me. I know you didn't hear me. I know you saw Happy Gilmore, the first one, where Bob.
Carl Weathers. Carl Weathers.
Yeah, yeah. Carl Weathers was in there. Mm-hmm. The Price is Right, dude.
Yeah, Bob Barker. Yep.
Bob Barker. He says the price is wrong, Bob. The Adam Sandler, he's in Happy Gilmore 2. Man, but before we dive into that, how did you get into acting?
Oh, wow, man. Just to kind of give you a brief synopsis of my upbringing, you know, hey, man, I'm from Philly, man. You know, other side of the tracks, inner city Philadelphia, you know, Coatesville, you know, all that. You know, it's economically depressed and, you know, coming from where we come from in our communities and, you know, those situations and those socioeconomic dynamics. You know, it's never easy, you know, and statistically, we ain't supposed to be here. We ain't supposed to make it. But by the grace of God, I'm here. And, you know, I made it. You know, I'm still not where I want to be yet, but so far from where I started. And that in itself is a blessing. And I always, you know, want to remain in a constant state of gratitude, you know, to the Most High. But I'm ex-military right out of high school, graduated University City High School, West Philadelphia, 36 in Philbert, right off of Market Street, which is no longer around because it got demolished. And a lot of the inner city schools in Philadelphia throughout the years from when I graduated class of 2000, they got taken over by the state, couldn't really justify a budget for funding the city of Philadelphia, school district of Philadelphia. So, you know, state came in, took over and just kind of dismantled everything. And, you know, a lot of schools got shut down, torn down. They built up a lot of, mastery charter schools outside of the neighborhoods to where, okay, how the, you know, the kids in the neighborhood, you know, going to get to these schools and all that, you know what I mean? And then from there, you can't justify a budget for funding, you know, for education, you know, for our kids, but you can justify at the time an $800 million budget to go ahead and build a new prison complex and a new youth study center. And a youth study center, is basically like UV Hall in Philadelphia, but it's a big mass, like prison industrial complex type situation. You know what I mean? So a lot of things, but not to, you know, I digress. But,
No. Keep going, man. I mean, this is all this leads up into how you got into the arts.
Yes, sir. You know, and then high school again, you know, I'm product of, you know, the system. I was awarded the state, group homes, institutions, you know, all that stuff. You know, my mother, unfortunately, you know, for a long time, battled, you know, PTSD and a lot of issues, you know, from the military and just through life or whatnot. And she, you know, succumbed to a very bad, severe drug addiction for, you know, most of my life. But, you know, shout out to my mother. And now she's, you know, clean and sober and has been for a number of years and living her best life in her 60s and just, you know, growing old gracefully and nothing but love and respect to her.
Yeah.
Man. And then from there, I ended up going into the military, you know, right out of high school, graduated. I was a young teenage father, you know, looking for love in all the wrong places, you know, hey, you know, just kind of fell into that, you know, those statistics, but still nonetheless, you know, I had my grandparents up until a certain point, you know, I was raised by them primarily for the most part of my life. And then up until the time I was 15, they had passed away and they actually died 5 months apart. And wow. Then, you know, coming from there, you know, I just kind of like was you know, on my own, you know, from 15 on up, DHS, you know, homes, group homes, institutions, all that stuff or whatever. And then I just said, you know, I got to get out of Philly. I want to do something better with myself. And I, you know, I didn't have the opportunities or, you know, the social economics, you know, in my background or the family didn't, you know, wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, nothing like that. Was a young teenage father, and I, you know, wanted to take care of my family and do the right thing, and ended up enlisting into the United States Air Force subsequently, right out of high school. And from there, did a couple years in the Air Force, got married really, really young, didn't work out, got out, and then I relocated to Los Angeles from Philadelphia. From there, you know, I was just trying to look for gainful employment, but at the time, there weren't a lot of employers that were really, I guess, they didn't value veterans experience. So I didn't really have a lot of opportunities because I didn't have a degree at the time. So I went ahead and said, you know what? Hey, screw it. Go ahead and reenlist, you know, soldiers, you know, airmen, you know, military personnel were creatures of habit. And I went back and I reenlisted. And I reenlisted into the U.S. Army, but this time reverting to the National Guard component, the California Army National Guard, to where, you know, I would enable myself to try to, you know, go to school. I started at Community College, Santa Monica College in Santa Monica, California, played on the football team, all that stuff. And then next thing you know, I got orders to deploy to Iraq for the war in 2005. And then during that time, I was going through MOS qualification training. I was 13 Bravo Field Artillery. When I was in the Air Force, I was Security Forces, military police. And then when I was in the Army, I was 13 Bravo Field Artillery, you know, with the howitzers and the tanks and lobbing big old rounds, 5 mile downrange, blowing up buildings and stuff or whatnot. And then I got hurt, dislocated my shoulder. After that, I went through a custody battle with my ex-wife, and you know, she fell on some hard times, and you know, I basically got custody of both my sons. At the time they were 4 and 5, and I've been a single father ever since. And now they're 26 and 24. My 26-year-old, he's in the Army. Yeah. My 24-year-old, he just competed in the Paris Olympics in wrestling for Team Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So he's doing phenomenal things. He's currently ranked 9th in the world at heavyweight. As an Olympic international wrestler. So I'm super proud of them. Props, love and respect to them. And, you know, I'm just wishing nothing the best as they continue upon their journey as men. And then from there, you know, I just kind of, you know, was just doing odd jobs and, you know, security, bouncer, bodyguard type stuff, because as soon as you're no longer conducive to the mission readiness of the U.S. Army, U.S. Armed Forces, the U.S. government, they just give you a pat on the butt, boot you, medical discharge, you know, and now, which happens to so many military veterans, they just let them fall through the cracks. And now you got to deal with the VA, the bureaucracy of the Veterans Affairs, Veterans Administration. And then it took me a long time, like close to 20 years almost, fighting the VA. And you got so many vets that fight the VA and the U.S. government for some sort of like benefits, transitional assistance. There was no transitional assistance for me, you know, healthcare, something. And but eventually I did get my 100% service connection rating, you know, a few years back, but still nonetheless, no vet should have to go through that after.
Right,
the paper,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So, and then from there, I just went ahead and, So this was back in 2006. A lot of the bouncers, I was still young and I still had that competition bug, that fire for competition to do something athletic, because football was my first love, but because of the injury and then, you know, I had to drop out of school. Now I'm no longer part of the military, so I can't afford school and all that stuff. Now I'm a single father, got to work. So I ended up started doing odd jobs, bodyguard, Hollywood bouncer type stuff. And a lot of the bouncers at the time were like cage fighters or kickboxers. So they went ahead, you know, I was kind of a lot bigger than what I am now, youthful vigor, you know, he was throwing around a lot of weight in the gym and everything. And they invited me to a few of the different jiu-jitsu academies, you know, like the Gracies and, you know, the Machados and the different, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu schools and the different MMA schools and all that. And, you know, I went ahead and, you know, of course, in typical youthful fashion, you know, we get a little bit, you know, cocky, you know, because we're big, we're strong, and, you know, we think we know everything, but we don't know nothing, you know, but we're, you know what I mean? And then, you know, I thought I was, you know, peacock big stuff, you know, because I'm big, strong, and I'm basically going there, you know, too much real experience, and I'm like ragdolling everybody. And then next thing you know, they put me up against some brother, I think it was from Brazil or Honduras or something like that. but he's probably maybe about 150 pounds, 160 pounds soaking wet. I was 265 at the time, bench pressing over 405, you know, squatting about 550, leg pressing over 1,000, you know, just, you know, doing all that, you know what I mean? Just really into the heavy power lifting and the bodybuilding type stuff. And I was ragdolling him. And then next, you know, I had a short gas tank. I ran out of gas and okay, my turn. And his little 150 pound self did some crazy, whatever, twisted me up like a pretzel. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it humbled me. And I said, you know what? I need to learn this. I want to learn this. And I just got bit by the competition bug. So I started competing and training diligently and dedicated myself over the last 20 plus years to the world of martial arts, MMA, mixed martial arts, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I currently hold a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Ricardo Wilkie through the Machado lineage. He's a black belt under Renato Magno. Renato Magno from Brazil. Ricardo's from Brazil as well. Renato Magno is a black belt protege directly from the legendary Higan Machado. And just went from there. And I started competing, started training, started competing, had an amateur career. But at the time, it wasn't really considered amateur because it was still non-sanctioned. So ergo illegal, you know, underground fight clubs and gambling and betting and stuff like that. But I had to make ends meet to try to feed my sons, you know, and trying to, you know, do what I can do to take care of me and my sons at the time. So from there, just went ahead. And then eventually I went pro. I had a series of injuries throughout, you know, my journey. A lot of injuries. I had like an ACL tear, PCL tear back in 2008 before I went pro. I had surgery at the VA, you know, usually in football, NFL, or any professional sports league. You know, once the ACL goes, like, done. Dunskies, it's a career ender. But right. For whatever reason, I'm just stubborn or maybe a little bit crazy. And, you know, there's no quit, no, you know, there's no stopping. I had to keep going, you know, and just to see, you know, where I could take it and test my limits and, you know, to fight in and outside the cage and in the ring and to prove myself, you know, to myself and to others that, you know, hey, I can be a part of this. I am who I am. And, you know, I am that dude, you know. And then I went pro eventually in 2011 after I healed up from all the injuries and whatever personal, you know, issues that I was going through at the time. And then I lost my professional debut for Respect in the Cage in Pomona, California. And then from there, series of injuries and just personal setbacks. And then I ended up having my second professional fight in 2014. And that was in Arizona, and great fight. I was doing my thing, was totally ready. And then I got caught, and then I got, you know, put down with subsequent repeated illegal blows to the back of the head, which was contested and challenged and should have been overturned by the Arizona Boxing Commission. But, you know, that was their hometown boy and they wasn't doing nothing about it. Props to him. He went on, he had a, you know, a decent career. And then after that, you know, just took some time. And then I just, I don't know, prayer, meditation, you know, healing the body, everything else. And just that mindset, you start to question yourself and your abilities and everything else. But again, I'm just, maybe I'm stubborn, crazy, whatever, but there's just no fight. I mean, no quit in me. I had to continue to fight. And then I came back and then I started fighting again. So this is what, 2011 pro debut, second fight, 2014. And then 2016. After all the injuries are healed up and everything else, I started training with the world-renowned Black House MMA headquarters gym in Gardena, California, Los Angeles, California, and training with the likes of Anderson Silva as a teammate, Lyoto Machida as a teammate, you know, the Nogueira brothers as teammates, and all these, the who's who from every different level of the mixed martial arts and, you know, jiu-jitsu world, you know, to be in there. And this was the thing about Black House. In order to get there at that time, is this is what made Black House so special and gave this mystique and this aura of just it, like fear and, you know, invincibility. Or like every time somebody was announced across the cage or across the ring from whatever fight, and hey, hailing from fighting out of Black House MMA, Los Angeles, California, that instilled a certain fear in other opponents from other schools and academies. And because like, you had to be invited and you were basically, we used to call it Home of Champions, Land of Lions, because it was Thunderdome Gladiator School all the time, no headgear. And these OGs, hey, you wanted to be here, you got to prove yourself, you know? So yeah. went ahead from there, had a great career. I went on a 10 fight win streak, fought for Gladiator Challenge. Props, shout out to Ted Williams, senior, and Teddy Williams, junior, promoters for that promotion here in California. Won a couple world titles with them, and, you know, went on a 10-fight tear, 10-fight win streak. And then eventually finished my career with a professional career at 10 wins, 2 losses, couple world titles. Had an opportunity to transition into professional wrestling. I started training with some guys from the WWE, well, it's now known as the WWE, but they were real big in the, well, back then it was the WWF, and then different promotions, rival competitors, such as like WCW or the NWA or New Japan Pro Wrestling and some of those different international contingents, AAA in Mexico. But not sure if you're familiar, you might have some wrestling fans in the audience, but Gangrel, the Vampire Warrior, was one of my trainers. Solofa Fatu Jr., better known as Rikishi, he was my trainer as well. And and they just kind of, along with other different trainers that came in there, but those were the two OGs, you know, the legends, Hall of Famers. And they just took me under the wing and, you know, had an opportunity I started training with them in 2015, you know, got trained up. We start going on the road and territory league, different independent promotions and stuff like that, and building a lot of, you know, traction and, you know, momentum. And, you know, the objective was to transition, go to like the big leagues, WWE, or go over to Japan and compete in Japan and all that kind of stuff. And then Rikishi brought me on. Always love and respect to Rikishi for this. Gave me an opportunity. He had got pulled in to do a film. And it's crazy because this is like a full circle moment, you know? He got pulled in to do a film called Sandy Wexler, starring Adam Sandler and Terry Crews and Jennifer Hudson and the who's who of Hollywood or whatever. And to where Terry Crews was, you know, it was based in the 90s. Adam Sandler was this big time talent agent or whatever. And Terry Crews was, you know, a big time star professional wrestler of the 90s, because wrestling in the 90s was huge. And he pulled me in along with a couple of his other proteges. And we got Taff Hartley, subsequently joined the SAG-AFTRA union. And I got bit by the acting bug, you know? So I'm like, wow, hold up. I'm up here, beat my body up. You know, because even people think wrestling is fake. You know, nothing fake about the falls and the bumps and getting smacked over the face or the back with steel chairs and going through tables and, right. And even the ring, the canvas, you know, like, it hurts. You got to learn how to fall probably, but still, nonetheless, it's a shock. It's the equivalent of going through like a 35 mile per hour car wreck, you know?
No way.
It's crazy, you know? And then from there, I just went ahead and got that opportunity and just ran with it. And, you know, I was in front of the camera. We filmed at the Great Western Forum where the Lake Show used to play back in the day. That was 2016. It was subsequently released in 2017 on Netflix. And I made, you know, a nice chunk of change for basically being in front of the camera doing stunts with Terry Crews, making him look good and let him just, you know, beat the hell out of me, you know? And I made a good chunk of change. And that right there gave me some perspective and context. I'm like, you know what? I'm up here beating my buddy up for this and that, whatever. And I was dealing with a lot of gatekeeping, a lot of nepotism in the world of professional wrestling, as well as the world of mixed martial arts. And I said, you know what? Let me go ahead and take this acting thing seriously, because that's one thing as we get older, you know? And then I was older when I started in professional wrestling, and 35 years old. And then, you know, I started in fighting in MMA when I was 24, which is still, you know, kind of old, you know, today's standards, because you got these kids that are basically being raised up and groomed from 4, 5, 6 years old, wrestling, martial arts, this and that. And when they turn 18, 19, they're black belts, and they're like prolific black belts at that, because they've been doing this their whole lives. So the evolution curve, oh my God, you know what I mean? It's crazy. From there, got bit by the bug. I said, you know what, let me go ahead and, you know, because Father Time's undefeated, let me go ahead and take this acting thing seriously. And I wanted to truly give it it's just doing respect. And because I know anything that you do, you know what I mean, you got to respect it. You can't come half-stepping, because if you do, it's going to show. It's going to translate. You know what I mean? So I went ahead. I took it seriously. I jumped into acting class, found an acting class. Like I was in college for 4 years straight, I was in acting class, BTAW, Breaking Through Acting Workshop with Choi Skinner. And then subsequently, I started training with Zach Barnett Studios, which is a well-known, prolific acting studio and coach here in Los Angeles. Anthony Montez, cousins to Danny Aiello, has Montez Method, you know, very similar to Meisner and all that stuff. Studied with Rachel Baylett over at the SAG-AFTRA Foundation. She does a lot of stuff with military veterans as well. SAG-AFTRA does have a subdivision specifically to where they focus and try to, you know, give a lot of you know, support to military veterans who have made the transition to Hollywood. And, you know, and just been rocking and rolling ever since. Got a manager, got an agent, you know, and just slowly but surely, gradually, you know, hey, it's not an overnight process. You know, you get a lot of rejection, you get a lot of no's. You got to have some thick skin for this business. But then again, hey, I've been told no all my life and I'm still here, still pressing forward.
So you just kind of fell into acting.
Yes, sir.
Being at the right place at the right time.
Yes, but sir.
Something you said that was real enlightening. Once you got the first gig in the first movie, you decided you wanted to take more acting classes. So you took acting classes, you surrounded yourself with people who were involved in acting and doing the same thing.
Yes, sir.
You just didn't decide, oh, okay, I can do this since I did this one time. You decided to invest in yourself and become a better self. And so as a result of that, how many movies have you been in?
Oh, man, I've been in quite a few projects. I can't even think off top. You know, I have about 32, maybe 33 film and television credits to my name listed on IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, which is, you know, for all that, you know, Hollywood professionals, for all the, you know, studios and directors, producers, casting agents go to, you know, basically look you up and research you to see if you're legit or not. And, you know, I've done Night Court on NBC, the reboot. I've done Superstore on NBC with America Ferrera. You know, I've done Grownish with Yara Shahidi on ABC Freeform, ABC Family, and I'm up there on IMDb. So, you know, grateful for all the, you know, blessings and the opportunities that I have had, and I'm just hungry. You know, feed me more. You know, I'm ready. I'm here. I'm ready.
So let me ask you a question, man. This is probably one of the questions you probably get all the time. Who has been the most interesting actor you've worked with? Now, we're gonna get to Adam Sandler in a minute, because I got a whole bunch of questions about working with that dude. I love that guy. But outside of him, like, you know, who do you work with that you found to really be interesting to work with?
Terry Crews, you know, super great guy, super funny, very jovial, very just likes to laugh, outgoing, you know, for him to be, you know, big, strong, tough guy or whatever. Like, he's pretty much a comedian at heart. He's like a big kid, you know what I mean? And a lot of great positive energy.
Yeah, yeah. Man, so I imagine, man, you just went through a whole life. Your whole life's achievements and where you are right now. Some people can only dream about this stuff, man. Have you thought about writing a memoir?
I've been, I guess, asked about that, you know, from different people, you know, within my circle or just people who I've encountered and stuff like that. It's like, man, you got a pretty phenomenal, intriguing story.
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
You know, like, it just is what it is. You know what I mean? And again, it's just one of those things, you know, hey, man, we're, you know, dealt different hands in life, you know, and you got to take the bitter with the sweet, maintain, keep it pushing. And only by the grace of God, I'm still here and still breathing, still able to keep it pushing, you know, and because of, you know, the Most High, because of, you know, my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ is, you know, that's the only reason why I'm here and why I'm able to do what I do.
So obviously I got to ask this question. This is good. You ever worked with Samuel Jackson?
No, but I would love to. I can't wait. I'm going to manifest that you manifest from your lips to God's ears. I want to work with everybody. I'm here.
Hey, man. Yeah, there's certain people, like, if I was an actor, there'd be certain people I want to work with.
Absolutely.
Adam Sandler would be one of them. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get to that in a minute. Don't leave. Don't go nowhere. But Samuel Jackson, I'd like to work with him. I would like to work with Tom Cruise. Yeah, I think it's a little weird.
No, but the thing is, what's phenomenal about him, and for him to be up in age, you know, he's in his 60s. He still performs all of his own stunts and at a high level.
That's what I'm saying.
Crazy. Right.
And he, you know, he's, you know, the dude's a go-getter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, despite, the dude's a phenomenal actor.
Oh, yeah.
So you get a call for the cast for Happy Gilmore 2.
Yes, sir.
What was that call like?
Oh, man, it was amazing. I had initially submitted the self-tape. There was a request for me to put in the self-tape. My agent, Raynard Pearson from Work Talent Agency. Shout out to Raynard, phenomenal agent. I mean, I've been with him rocking and rolling with Raynard and with my manager, Cheryl Martin from CMA Entertainment. And they represent some of the, you know, up and coming burgeoning who's who of the game right now. And some pretty established, you know, people that's in the game. And, you know, Raynard say, hey, you got a request for a submission for self-tape because, you know, post COVID and post strikes and all that, even though there's still some in-person auditions, but it's very, very, limited. It's not as much as it used to be. So everything is self-tape. Did the self-tape, sent it in, got a call back like almost immediately within 24 hours and nailed it. And that was it. And like, oh man. And just to have that opportunity, you know what I'm saying? To work with Adam again. I mean, it's just amazing because he's such a great guy. And then come to find out when I get on set, they remember me from Sandy Wexler almost a decade ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Man,
that's pretty awesome. So what character are you playing in the new movie?
Yeah, well, I can't talk about too much of the characters and the details and the premise and the synopsis yet. You know, we get ready for, you know, red carpet premiere that's coming up July 21st in New York City. And then also to the subsequent world premiere release on Netflix. That's on July 25th. So once I get the parameters and everything else and they premiere it and everything, yeah, it's free reign, and I can go ahead and start to disseminate everything. But
so let me rephrase the question then. Let me put on my political hat here, and let me rephrase the question. So, in getting the character and your personality, how often or how hard was it not for your personal character not to drift off in the staying the character you were on camera? Because like I saw a couple of movies where when Will Smith was doing I, Robot, okay? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, in the same proximity, mm-hmm. he was doing Ali. And some of the scenes in I, Robot, his Ali personality came out. I caught it. And I pointed it out to my wife. I was like, he said it just like he said it in Ali. So was there a bleed over in your personality?
Not necessarily. I guess the reason why, because, you know, in real life, I mean, my personality, like, I'm like the biggest goofball. Like, I love to laugh. I love to joke around. You know, I love, you know, talk mess. And then people in my circle, they'll talk mess. And we go back and forth. And it's just always all in good fun, always a good time. But, you know, I can talk smack with the best of them.
So not too much, huh?
Yeah, not too much. It was pretty much par for the course, you know. It was just me, but amplified on 10 and then some, you know?
Yeah, okay. So how was it working with Adam Sandler?
Oh, man. Like, working with Adam Sandler and, man, the rest of the cast, how can I say, has been an incredible experience. Like there's so much talent and legacy there, you know what I mean? Like, just going back, like, if you think about it, right, the first one, 1996, I was in middle school when that came out.
Yeah.
I loved it when it first came out. But, however, a lot of people don't realize when it came out, I think it was, what, released on Universal Pictures back then, in the theaters and all that, it bombed at the box office. And then just throughout the years gained full steam and just became a cult classic. And then here we are almost 30 years later, we're doing part two. Like, part two. Crazy.
So the crazy part about it is that when I told my wife, hey, I'm going to be interviewing Fernando Marrero, who's going to be in Happy Gilmore 2. She's like, really? So we went back this weekend and watched Happy Gilmore.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie was funny when I first watched it.
Oh, yeah.
The movie was funny the 10th time I watched it.
It's always funny.
The movie was funnier now that I'm an old guy.
Yeah.
And sitting just cracking up, man, when he broke the what you call his fingers. The fight with Bob Barker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, his anger management issues, you know. But him, you know, him being able to transition, he's got to be a fun guy to be around.
Oh, he's a super fun guy. I mean, just like that guy, man, just super professional. And a perfectionist is like, okay, it's time to work. And whatever we got to do, he's going to get the shot. You know, and he gets the shot. We move on, all that, whatever. But just real professional, respectful, just jovial, down to earth. Like, Like, he's that guy that shows up at the Oscars, probably the only guy that can do that and doesn't care. Show up at the Oscars with a hockey jersey, a pair of Timberland boots on, and some sweatpants. You know what I mean? So,
but, I mean, they say he still walks around the neighborhood and plays basketball with people.
Oh, yeah. Don't be surprised you see him at a, you know, pickup game in Rucker Park or, you know what I mean, or some blacktop somewhere. Like, and don't let it fool you. Yo, Adam Sandler can ball. Like,
I believe it.
He can ball, you know what I mean? And he be hitting them with them no-look passes like, you know, Magic Johnson back in the day with the Lake Show, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That is hilarious, man. You know, it's just phenomenal how some people have, like, you know, different stories of how they got their start into acting. You know, I was homeless and I lived in my car. Mm-hmm. You know, you came from military background, military experience, you know, good grandparents, and, you know, went through the martial arts. Went through jujitsu, MMA, wrestling. I don't know why you decided to go wrestling, man. Them guys are nuts. I ain't jumping off the top rope for nobody.
Yeah.
I ain't jumping off the bottom rope.
Like, yeah, I ain't even gonna bounce off the rope.
No, like I'd probably fall through the rope. But then you end up meeting a guy who's getting casted, and you just so happen to be at the right place at the right time.
Yes, sir.
And now, you know, 30 something productions later,
mm-hmm.
you get the gig for Happy Gilmore 2.
Yes, sir. That is good.
I'm finna see your face on Netflix in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir. In 2 weeks, July 25th, it's going down. You know what I'm saying? It's going down. I'm part of the main cast, significant role. It's going down. And I'm just immensely grateful, you know, to Adam, to Happy Madison, to the casting, Netflix, you know, Kevin Grady, executive producer, you know, all those guys, my manager, my agent, and just, you know, I'm bringing a lot of fresh, new energy to the game, you know, and you guys are in store for a lot of laughs.
Oh, dude. Now, what I need from you, though, this is what I need, because, you know, old people can be demanded. What I need from you, after this movie premieres, and me and my wife watch it, I'm going to get in contact with you again. As soon as we get done with the interview, I'm gonna give you my phone number and stuff, so that way you can say, "Hey, Jay, let's do the other interview now. Let's talk about this." Because I got a whole bunch of questions, and I know you're on the gag order right now. You can't really talk about it until it's released. But man, it's just phenomenal, and you still got a lot of years left.
Yes, sir. Hey, I'm not stopping. You know, and then as we get older, you know, I'm more and more. Conscious, you know, and elevating, you know, in discernment and just in spirituality and just, you know, holistic approaches to life and eating better, eating cleaner, exercise, rest, sleep, you know, hydration, fasting, everything else, you know what I mean? And, you know, we've done so much to our bodies, you know, throughout the years, you know, physically, you know, even the stuff that's in the food and water and stuff like that, man, you got to take charge at some point and take control, you know what I mean? And that's what I did. And like, I'm probably in some of the best shape I've ever been my entire life. You know, so much mental clarity. You still have a lot of brain fog and everything else. But just everything is just, I don't know, seems to be firing on all cylinders right now. And I'm truly grateful.
And the brain fog because you got slammed on that mat when you were wrestling.
Or got clocked over the head with a steel chair.
Oh, my God. I got a friend of mine who wrestles.
Uh-huh.
And I went to a couple of these wrestling matches. And after the match, I was like, dude, you're nuts. Like, the dude got slammed up against the wall. Mm-hmm. Didn't realize a nail was hanging out the wall. He got hit in the head. He was bleeding all over the place. Mm-hmm. One dude got his leg broke. They had to call an ambulance. I was like, wait, mm-hmm. time out, bro. Like, why in the world? Yeah. But at any rate, so how do your sons feel about your acting?
Oh man, they thought it was amazing, and they it's actually crazy. My 24-year-old, he was coming up from Puerto Rico, and he was actually on his way to the World Championships. I believe it was in Croatia or Bulgaria or something like that at the time. So this is when we were filming, and we were filming fourth quarter last year. Pretty much from like, I think it was like 4 or 5 months total of filming. I was on set and filming for a little over 1 month. And he came up, and for whatever reason, I guess, whatever his travel accommodations were kind of screwed up or jacked up a little bit. And he had a crazy layover at Newark Liberty in Jersey at the airport. And he hit me up at it's like 4 or 5 in the morning. I'm in the limousine on my way to set from my hotel. And he's like, "Hey, Pops, I'm in town." "What? What you doing in town?" "Well, I'm supposed to be going to Europe, you know, for, you know, this competition or the world championships, you know, for Puerto Rico, but my layover is like 13 hours. And I just like, "Man, just go to my hotel, this and that, whatever." And then, you know, and then apparently there are, you know, people familiar with my son as well. And they just kind of rolled out the red carpet, showed me and extended so much love and grace to me and my son. They sent a car for him, brought him to set. He got to hang out with us on set and everything else. And then they took him to the airport. And then from there, flew, what, 15, 16, 17 hours to, you know, Eastern Europe and did his thing, was out there for a couple of weeks. And then he actually came back and then stopped again and had another crazy layover and then kind of chilled with me in the hotel a little bit. I think I was off for like that day or something. And then that's it. We just spent some time. And then he went back home to Puerto Rico and, you know, doing his thing, you know, so.
That's pretty cool, man. So they're like proud of Pops. Hey, who's your dad? Oh, man, my dad's Fernando Marrero, man. He's an actor, dude. Like, really? Yeah, he's in Happy Gilmore, Adam Sandler.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, dude, that's some cool stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I guess this is a legal question. I can ask you this. Mm-hmm. When doing your lines, do y'all ever go off script?
Oh, and yeah.
Who determines if it's like really, really, really funny? Mm-hmm. Oh no, keep that in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you have liberty to like develop your character and kind of put your own spin on some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends. I guess it depends on the, I guess the project. You know, the directors. You know, producers, stuff like that. But with Adam Sandler, I mean, man, he's a lot of stuff is ad-libbed, you know what I mean, right off the top, you know, and we had free reign and opportunity, you know, to do a lot of ad-libbing and to kind of, you know, put our own, you know, say qua on little spice and seasoning on stuff. And, yeah. You know, and it was just synergy. It was magic and everything just came together and it just gelled. And it was a beautiful experience.
So I know I can't ask you this, but you know I want to. But in the first, I could talk about this because this movie's already out. In the first Happy Gilmore, they told him to go to his happy place when he was putting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so I was cracking up. He had the one lady with 2 pitchers of beer in a bathing suit, mm-hmm. laying on the bed, had his grandma winning the lottery,
mm-hmm.
and had a little person riding a tricycle. So I can't ask you if some of that same buffoonery is going to be in there, and I mean that in a respectful, hilarious way. But man, that to think about something like that, the happy place, mm-hmm. and you got a little person riding a tricycle dressed in a cowboy suit. You remember?
Oh yeah, I remember. Classic.
Yeah, it's a classic scene, man. So I can't wait. Because that movie was so hilarious. And now I know somebody personally that's going to be in that movie.
Oh, yeah? Who's that?
Hey, Fernando Marrero. Dude, I'm telling you, man. I wish you all the you know, Godspeed and success. For what it's worth, man, I'm proud of you, bro.
I appreciate that, my brother. Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
Because, you know, sometimes when things get hard in life, we tend to lose focus on the grind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And so instead of you saying, "Oh man," because I'm ex-military as well. I spent 10 years in the Army.
Okay. What was your MOS? What you do?
51 Bravo.
Okay.
Carpentry Masonry Specialist.
Oh man, so, you was that dude.
Yeah, I was 890th Engineering Battalion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we hung out with the 12, 11, and 13 Bravos. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Especially when we went overseas to like build schools and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You
know, I was trained in an infantry regiment in Fort Leonardwood, Missouri.
Okay.
So, you know, but I guess the military kind of teaches you not to give up in adversity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like never quit because the term they kept drilling into us over and over again is you can't go to sleep because Charlie's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's Charlie. The enemy is Charlie. They're going to kill you. It's either Charlie or Jody. Jody don't took your girl, and Charlie's coming to kill you. You know what I'm saying, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, but it teaches you, my drill sergeant used to say, you need to have esprit de corps and intestinal fortitude. Mm-hmm. Keep that drive going. And, you know, hearing your testimonial, how you've went through some hardship, but you just kept that drive going. And now you know, not only are you a black belt, y'all don't mess this dude on the street. You know, he's smiling.
I ain't too old to run up on yet. Not yet.
Hey, man, you like, you know, the young version of Steven Seagal running around here, man. You see you. That's Jackie Chan stuff, man. That's crazy stuff.
I feel that. All that stuff, all that other stuff is purdy and pretty in the movies, and no diss to nobody or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I stand firm in, you know, my training and everything that I've been through, battle-tested soldier of life, battle-tested in the cage and everything else. And unless you've been in the cage and fought and all that, whatever, all that fancy purdy stuff and acrobatic stuff, I don't, you know, think a lot of it is too practical against, you know, another skilled trained professional in a setting like that, you know. And that was why and how the UFC was set up back in 1993 with Hoist Gracie and the Gracie family, and they wanted to find out which individual martial arts style was better. But going back, lending credence to Bruce Lee's original philosophy, you know, there's no one style. You know, every style complements each other, and then if you can take various different aspects of different styles, use it together, now you have your own style, your own everything. You got a little bit of this, a little bit of that, whatever, but you understand the concepts and the approaches. You can not only strike, you can fight on the ground. You know how to grapple. You know how to wrestle. You know submissions, joint manipulations, locks, chokeholds. All you can not only just apply it, but you can defend it, because you got a lot of people that once they get on the ground, it's like, oh, man, it's like a fish out of water, and they flopping around, don't know what to do. It's very much so, it's super technical.
Well, you know what my style is? Smile and wave. Hey, sir, how are you, man?
You want to talk about it? You need a hug.
I know you're angry right now, but let me buy you a cup of coffee.
Exactly.
I'm too old to be out there scrapping, man. So in the movie, you probably can't tell me this, but you didn't put Adam Sandler in the leg hole in the movie.
No. No, I'm not trying to catch no cases, man. I'm trying to thrive and stay in my lane and just keep it going, man, and just live life, take care of my family, and that's it, man.
So what's next? What's next after this movie?
Oh, man, I got a lot of things, you know, this next, again, I just want to start by saying, you know, I appreciate everyone who supported me throughout the years and, you know, every stage and had a hand in my development, you know, all across the board, from martial arts to acting to whatever. But no, man, what's next? I got a few things coming down the pike, a few pitches, a few potential offers. But I know definitely right now there's one particular film, And Then You Die, starring Jamal Lewis. He's an up and coming, actor doing his thing. He was in the recent Barbie movie last year, which was nominated at the Oscars. You know, he's doing his thing. He's, you know, about to break out as this huge action star. And I was given the offer to be number two in the call sheet in a supporting role. And I'm looking forward to that. Also, too, I was blessed to be a part of an independent fan film project called Triggered, a cinematic fan film, Marvel superhero cinematic fan film. A brother by the name of Marcus Neljamal Ham. He's from the DMV area. He's out here in Los Angeles doing his thing. We did two installments, won tremendous amount of awards domestically and internationally on the film festival circuit when it made its film festival run. We're doing that. We're got in the works a third installment for that. Marcus is a phenomenal brother doing his thing. Is an award recipient of the HAPA Awards as a NAACP Image Award nominee. Just doing a lot of great things. And then also there's another brother by the name of director Lovey Ray Johnson Jr. I was fortunate and blessed enough to be a part of his project, which is in the post-production process and everything now, and they're trying to get everything together with that. But it's called The Sins. It's Seminole Indian Negro Scouts, basically touching on the untold history of the Seminole Indians and a lot of the Negro Scouts who emerged from slavery after the Civil War, post-Civil War in the 1870s. They were regarded as the first special forces. And to where, you know, they were enlisted or recruited by the U.S. government, you know, at the time, the U.S. Army to aid the U.S. government in westward expansion and fighting the Plains Indians and the Comanches. And, you know, once, you know, the Sens, you know, the Seminole Indian Negro Scouts did their thing and never lost a battle, never lost a man in battle or, you know, or major wound or anything like that. All very historically documented, well documented. And in true typical U.S. Army military American fashion or whatnot, say, okay, cool. They reneged on their offers and their promises, and they got what they wanted out the deal. But now they turned it back on the Sens and, you know, hunted them and killed some of them, ran some of them into exile into Mexico. And that was that. There was actually a huge memorial down there in Texas for, you know, this history, for, you know, those ancestors or whatnot. But, you know, that story's definitely going to be told. And, you know, definitely, hopefully, looking forward for that to get picked up into, you know, maybe, you know, a series or maybe in a major big budget feature film, but tremendous awesome. Opportunities.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you ever done any horror movies?
Not yet, and I can't wait. That's something that's on the bucket list, and that I'm really looking forward to do horror, sci-fi, fantasy, Star Trek, live long and prosper type stuff. You know what I mean?
Right, man.
Hey, it's either Star Trek, or if you're wrestling, it's Vader time.
Hey, man. So, you know, I watch all the paranormal stuff on TV. Uh-huh. It used to be that, you know, people of color wasn't into ghosts.
Exactly.
And then I ran across the Ghost Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen them?
No, I haven't seen them.
So they have a show on Tubi. And they're on AMC.
Okay.
So they're Ghost Brothers. It's three black dudes that do paranormal investigation.
Okay.
And I said, man, that would be... No, it wouldn't. Because I'm not trying to do no ghosts like that, bro. So, you know, I've seen to where, you know, some of these films, the horror films, have some kind of truality to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you still think that'd be kind of interesting?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely. See, that's one thing, brother. Hey, man, I'm fearless, man. Hey, I'm from Philly. I done seen ghosts, zombies, drug addicts, murderers, all types of craziness in Philly coming up. You know, and then coming out here to Los Angeles, man, it's like they got those in South Central right now on Watts, Compton, whatever. You know, you go to South Side, West Side, Chicago. You go to Baltimore. You know what I mean? You go to D.C. You go to Detroit, yeah. NOLA, New Orleans. You know, everywhere, you know what I mean? And I'm pretty well traveled. I travel the world and I've seen a lot of things as well. You know what I mean? So nothing fazed me. And then on top of that, hey, I'm covered by the blood at the end of the day. So,
hey, I feel you, man. So we're going to leave with this question. I know you're from Philly. Have you been seeing what's been going on with the trash people being, the sanitation workers being on strike?
Yes, unfortunately. And it's so sad because Philly, man, is such a great city, such a beautiful city. And, you know, I'm not really into the politics, and I hate politics because politicians mess things up. They screw it up so bad, whether it be for greed, personal gain, you know, lobbyists, you know, favors, you know, quid pro quo, one hand wash the other. It's always something deeper within the politics. But, you know, for the mayor to do what she did, gave herself a 9% raise, and then only gave, you know, the sanitation workers who are only making what, $45,000-$50,000 a year, you know, and they're the ones who keep the city clean. Like, oh, yo, take care of your people, take care of the workers, take care of what they need to be taken care of, you know, because at the end of the day, we're in 2025 and what cost of living and inflation and everything else. Okay, $45,000-$50,000, that was probably a lot of money back in 1985, maybe 1992, you know what I mean? To where, okay, middle class, you're doing something, you're okay, you know, 2025, I don't cut it no more.
No. Yeah, it's just unfortunate. I was looking at some of the news coverage today. And
it's affecting so many communities, so many neighborhoods. And it poses a health problem, health risk. You know what I mean?
A serious health problem. Yeah. Because it's going to take them a while to clean this up.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not just like two, three garbage bags just sitting out there.
It's neighborhoods all throughout the city. Every block, blocks long of that.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. Man, it's going to take them months to clean all that up. But, you know, the bugs, the insects, and the rodents.
Yeah, the rats. Carry diseases, all that.
Man, it's going to be crazy. So the only reason I brought that up, because I know you're from Philly. So we were sending prayers out to them folks in Philly.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely, for sure.
Also, I want to send prayers out to the folks over in Texas.
Yes, yes.
That dealt with the flood. Man, they say that doggone floodwaters between 4:30 in the morning and 5 o'clock, 5:15, rose over 20 something feet.
That's crazy. That's so sad.
30 minutes is over 20 feet. It was covering houses at this point. So they had no way to escape. It was 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and imagine, you know, getting hit with that deluge, you know, and you sleeping comfortably nestled in your bed with your wife, you know, your kids or watching something. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know what I mean? Like that happens and you're just completely immersed. And a lot of people were just unfortunately succumbed to, you know, those fatalities. And it's such a shame. So nothing but, you know, love, prayers and respect, you know, to survivors, if there are any survivors, and just to the families and extended families. And it just, you know, if there is more, the world needs more empathy, more compassion, you know, and if there's more empathy, more compassion, we'll definitely be better off as a society, as a civilization. But we are definitely living in some strange times, my brother.
Yeah. Hey, I want to leave you with this. But ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to go to your Play Store. And it's free. I promise it's free. I ain't gonna cost you nothing. Go to your Play Store and download the Live 365 app, and then type in J. Will Gospel Radio. And if you're a musical artist and you want your music potentially featured on my show, which is the J. Will Gospel Show or the Unsigned Artist Gospel Show, hit me up, LeeWillTheLetterJ@gmail.com, LeeWillTheLetterJ@gmail.com. And don't forget, in 2 weeks, we have Happy Gilmore 2 coming up, and my man right here, Fernando Marrero, is going to be in there. Now, if y'all ever come up with anything where y'all need a radio personality to fill in one of them roles, don't forget your boy over here, Jay Will.
No doubt. Most definitely.
Don't forget me, man, because, you know, I'm not really a thespian, you know. For those of y'all who know, that's an actor. Ladies and gentlemen, I wasn't talking about nobody's gender. They're called thespians, right? Actors, right? I do a lot of reading, okay? Well, you know, I think it would be pretty cool to just sit on set with you guys and just watch you guys work. I think it's pretty phenomenal, man, because you do have to kind of get out of yourself and become that character.
Absolutely.
And for you to be successful, to even get the phone call over a video interview, and now you got a leading role in this movie, man. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Any last words for the people?
No, again, man, I just appreciate everybody, man. Thank you for the love. Thank you for the support. Keep, you know, locked in. Stay locked in. Stay tuned. You know, follow me on social media. IG, Instagram, @team_PBA, you know, Team Philly Badass. That was my handle, my moniker when I was, you know, in MMA and also in wrestling, you know, as the PBA. You know, again, this is just the beginning. I've got more roles in the works. And you know, I'm looking forward to showing more range as an actor and as a thespian, as a talent, and, you know, just showcasing my versatility. And that's one thing that I've always appreciated and loved about acting, how you can just, like, and pretty much take on any role, any character, and allows you to do so many different things and tap into so many different aspects of your, you know, your personality, who you are, so many things that you have left to unpack, you know, life experiences, emotions, whatever. It's definitely very cathartic, you know, form of release therapy. But also, nonetheless, you get to experiment and just have fun and just be a kid, you know, and I think that. Yeah. Now, that's something that we've lost because we get so wrapped up in the rat race of life and, you know, trying to make ends meet and work and this and that and whatever. And sometimes we just got to unplug from everything and unplug from the world and just kind of get back to, you know, who we were and what we used to do, what we used to be.
I always say that if I was going to portray a cartoon character, I would want to do a voiceover for Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Hey, Chuck. We got to go over here, Chuck. We got to get some ham sandwiches.
No. Oh, no Papa John's?
Oh, yeah. Eat fresh Papa John's. Bigger slices, bigger pizza.
That's really good, man. That's really good.
I do some stuff from time to time, man. Just, you know, being hilarious. But ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to go to the doctor. Get yourself checked out. A1C, blood pressure, cholesterol. Black men, get your prostate checked. There's this myth going on that if a black man get his prostate checked, it means that he's homosexual. That is not what that means.
You got to
get your prostate checked and get your TSA levels checked, because prostate cancer is killing black men faster than, you know, East Compton on a bad day. So get yourself checked out and get some life insurance. Don't leave your family strapped in case something happens to you. We love chicken dinners. Well, they love chicken dinners, but we're tired of having GoFundMes and chicken dinners, selling them in case something happens to you. Leave your family set up for success. All right. Until the next time, may the Lord God bless and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you. And may the Lord God give you peace. Don't hang up, sir. I want to talk to you just a little bit.
Yes, sir.